made this whole broadcast possible. Go to our website at democracynow.org to see our continued coverage. Next week, we'll speak with Mariel Hemingway about suicide and her family, about her grandfather, Ernest Hemingway. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to the January 25th Auto Show edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronik, and I'm here today hosting the show. And I guess that's because, boy, I had an experience at the Detroit Auto Show that I'm going to share with you in some detail. And hopefully in a few minutes we're going to get a call from a special guest from one of the area's great automotive magazines, and going to get his opinions of what was going on down at the auto show, and what the highlights and maybe even some of the lowlights were. I just have to say, and I'm waiting for his call, so if he's listening on the internet or something, just go ahead and dial the number and I'll pick it up. We're very, you know, friendly around here at picking up calls in the middle of our talking. First of all, I went down on Tuesday, the 22nd. Today is the 25th. This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for January 25th. And, of course, it was freezing cold that morning. Traffic was terrible. But what do you expect in the Motor City, right, with almost no functioning metro transit possibilities? You know, fewer buses than ever before. People mover, you can't really call that an effective light rail transport because it's mainly for tourists going and stopping at tourist designations. I know some people may use it who work downtown for getting from one little place to another, but in terms of transport to any significant population areas and to downtown Detroit, it fails. So basically here we have the Motor City, which has tons of traffic, especially when there's a big event like the auto show. And of course, how close and how convenient is parking? Well, I went down there about 10 a.m. and Cobo Hall roof parking, the indoor parking, the garage parking was all blocked off. So either it was closed, it was only for monthly permits or something like that. And half the streets around Cobo had police, you know, doing their duty, blocking off the streets. So you couldn't even drive around close. And I'm sure there's reasons for that, of course. It's always been disappointing like that. It's always confusing. Okay, we have a phone call coming in. Let me try to pick that up now. Hi, this is WHFR. Jay Koronik speaking. Can I help you? Hi, Jake. Thanks for calling in. I hope you have about, 15, 20 minutes available. Okay, yeah, we're going to talk about the auto show and your background. I'll put you on in just about 10 seconds, so hang on there. Okay. Hello, Jake Holmes from Automobile Magazine. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hello. So nice of you to have the time to talk to us. I assume it's been a pretty busy couple of weeks out there for Automobile Magazine writers and editors covering the auto show. Of course, there's always new cars coming out every day, auto shows all over the place. But first of all, let's start by having you tell us about yourself a little bit, Jake Holmes. When I looked you up on Wikipedia, I found the singer-songwriter Jake Holmes, and you're probably aware of his name.
From the 1970s, yeah.
Yeah, he's 73 years old now, but he was famous for a couple of little things. I actually have one of his songs I'm going to play after our interview, so but there's no connection there, right?
No, there's no connection. And okay. he kind of became especially famous for writing product jingles, and I'm sure you saw that there was a whole lawsuit over whether Led Zeppelin stole songs from him.
Right, the Dazed and Confused, which is a song I happen to have queued up. But yeah, I did the Be a Pepper soft drink commercial along with Randy Newman. So
So unfortunately, there's no connection, which is too bad because he has a lot going for him, it sounds like.
Now, especially there's no connection because you come from England originally. You were born in England?
Yes, I was born and grew up there, but then moved to Michigan, went to middle school and high school and college, and feel very fortunate to have ended up near the auto industry in southeast Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Because apparently, I was reading your bio that's on the website, and sort of like myself, you've been interested in cars from an early age.
I really was. I My father was an engineer, and I was just always interested in cars, whether the cars that he had or my family had, or watching them on TV or reading magazines about them. And so I feel fortunate that I was able to go into a career where I get to spend a lot of time with new cars. I think when I was younger, if I had known that I would end up with a job like this, I would have been very, very happy.
Well, it's always something we try to... I'm also a professor here at Henry Ford Community College, and you know, students are always coming here trying to look for a program that'll get them a job. And of course, the ideal is to get a job that you also love. You know, you're working in some topic that you love, some area that, of life that you love. Congratulations to you. How would you describe now for us Automobile Magazine? I know that, first of all, it is the editorial offices in the U.S. are based right here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, as well as the editorial offices for Road and Track and Car and Driver. I'm not sure where Motor Trend is. Is that somewhere in Michigan, I bet? But
Motor Trend is actually in Southern California.
Oh, wow. They left us. Shame on them. And Auto Week, I guess, is in Detroit.
Auto Week is in Detroit.
Yeah.
What's the difference? There's a hub of automotive publications around Detroit just because you have such great access then.
What would you say is the difference? Do a little plug here for the angle or the difference between them, without necessarily horribly putting down the other magazines. But if people are more interested in cars in general, but maybe you know well performing cars, how would you just personally subjectively describe the difference between at least the Ann Arbor based magazines?
Well, for us at Automobile, one of our founders' mottos was no boring cars, and that kind of follows through not just to cars but to the stories we tell as well. So we try and have adventures with cars, we try and get involved with the people and the culture around cars, so that sometimes means doing more of a travel story where you travel somewhere with a car and meet someone along the way. Mm-hmm. We also pay a big focus on design. We have a design editor, Robert Cumberford, who every month analyzes some new car, and those are sort of two things that make us stand out from some of the other magazines that spend maybe a little bit more time on measuring every statistic of every minivan that comes in their parking lots. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily do that as much, but we focus on some of these other aspects.
Well, and I will say, I subscribe to all of them, there certainly are differences. I would say, and no disrespect, but I can say this, maybe not you, because you'd like to be more open-minded with your colleagues, but Auto Week's articles are very short. I mean, they try to cover the latest cars. They're relatively short. I think Car and Driver does some very good things. A couple of years ago, they had a whole issue that talked about just handling and the best handling cars and what is handling. It's more than just performance, and I thought that was a special awareness, so I think they're doing some good things, certainly. Automobile Magazine, and no disrespect to Road and Track here, that is sort of a mixture of these other characteristics I'm talking about, but Automobile has always had great writing. And that may sound unusual to some people, but as a professor, a former professor of literature here, I'd have to say that the stories are well written, entertaining, very descriptive, but also very frequently with a sense of humor. If there's criticism, it's well-balanced and insightful. I mean, the tradition of good writing is right there in Automobile Magazine. You mentioned the founders, one of the founders' mottos, was that David E. Davis Jr.?
That was, yes.
Yeah. And he passed away just a couple of years ago, but certainly Gene Jennings, your current editor, was a close friend of his and carries on that tradition. And obviously selecting yourself must have been part of that. Tell us now, since we've got a few minutes, about your job. You're an associate web editor. I have to say, I have read online your article about the fact that someone stole the Automobile Magazine Audi A7.
Yes, that was a sad moment for us all. That was a car that we loved. We voted it our Automobile of the Year for 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one for a year, and we drove it all across the country to California, to Florida. And unfortunately, when it went to New York, it didn't return with us. So we all missed the car a lot, but it was a great, great car while we had it.
What a great article, though. I mean, it not only showed the admiration you have for that piece of machinery, but a lot of the background and the highlights and the lowlights of that whole experience. Now, to be fair to people in this area, it wasn't stolen here in Michigan. It was, if I got it right, New York State somewhere?
It was in New York, yes. It went out with one of our editors there, and unfortunately, we don't know where it ended up after that.
I'm a little surprised that with the kinds of cars that you guys have, that you didn't have some sort of GPS tracking in it. LoJack, is that one of the systems?
Yeah, well, the car was owned by Audi and was all
sure.
Owned to us.
Well, that's their problem then, huh?
Yeah, not that we want to just dump the problem or forget about it, but
no,
I know that they're trying to follow up and work out what's going on with that. So.
Right. Oh, of course, it's an expensive, high-performing sedan, about $75,000 or whatever, but it's in four-wheel drive. That's important in this weather. But it was a great article. It was long. You know, it was only like 50 words. Oh, somebody stole our great car. You know, it was, would you say, more than 1,000 words, I think, about 8 or 10 paragraphs, I think. I didn't count the words, but.
Well, that's the great thing about having cars for a year. When we get the opportunity to work with a manufacturer to do what we call a four seasons test, so that's testing it winter, spring, summer, fall, we get so much more out of the car, and we can write a big story about all the experiences people had with that car. So with the Audi, for instance, people did all sorts of things in it. Some people moved painting supplies in it. Some people took their girlfriends on date night in it, and some people took road trips down to Florida. And that just gives us so much more fodder to write a huge story and have lots of beautiful photos to go along with that.
Right, yeah. It really is an important part. A great machine, mobility machine, is so much a great part of many people's lives who are into that, of course. But the writing is still very entertaining to read. I have to say I also subscribe to the two big British magazines, Car Magazine and Top Gear. Mm. And, wow, great writing there, too, in both of them. In fact, I have the... burn all my car magazines today. The current issue of Car Magazine actually has an article about an Audi R20, which I don't know if they're really making it yet, but it's going to be the big top of the line someday, maybe. But it's written by George Catcher, and it turns out that he's also your European editor of Automobile Magazine.
Yes, George Cocker also supplies us his sort of insider intelligence from Europe. He's been really well integrated and connected with the car industry there for so long that sometimes he can bring us stories. So, for instance, with this Audi R20, he knows these details that maybe wouldn't be publicized through any other means for a little longer. So he's a great resource for us to have. Obviously, he's also involved with car as well.
Uh-huh.
We have a great relationship with him.
And sometimes in Europe, they get cars that we don't get first. I mean, they might get them a year or two before they're actually introduced to the U.S., maybe because, I don't know, emission testing or crash testing or something delays them.
And that makes us so frustrated when we see a great car we want to drive that's
exactly.
only available in Germany or in the U.K.,
okay. Well, let's switch to the auto show and automobiles right now. I have just a couple of obvious questions. When did you attend? Did you go during the media week?
I did. I went on the Monday and Tuesday of media week, which is a little bit different than when people go on public days. Mm-hmm. There are more presentations and press conferences going on.
Right. I've been to those in the past, and now I don't really feel, excuse me, a little bit of cold there. I don't have to get the credentials anymore because a lot of it is covered live on one sort of video feed or not. I saw the 2014 Corvette introduction through the internet, of all things. So, you know, that was great.
It's an interesting change from when I first went to auto shows and nobody really knew what was going to be at the show until you showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And now so many of the reveals of cars are shown online or they're previewed ahead of time that it does give people an opportunity. Even if they're not there, they still get to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a crucial question. I got to get out of the way first because there's still one weekend for people to go down and visit the auto show. Where did you park?
That is a good question. Often I park on Cobo Roof. It's $10 and you can take an elevator straight mm-hmm. down into Cobo Arena, which is really convenient. But, you know, I've had good luck parking at any of the garages near Cobo on around Congress and mm-hmm. Washington. But that is it is always a question people ask is where do you actually park when you get down there?
Yeah, I mean I think I saw a total number of about 6,000 journalists that did get media credentials and attended the show that week, and of course many other kinds of people attended too. But maybe the traffic wasn't as bad as this week. I went down Tuesday morning, and you couldn't even get to Cobo. I mean, I don't know, the roof was filled, and I went down like first thing in the morning, and I had to. I did finally park in Joe Louis Arena, but since it's been so bitter cold, it wasn't a fun 10-minute walk. Although,
no, I understand.
It was as quick as I could make it. Certainly,
the media days are always a really early start for me because I have to drive from Ann Arbor, obviously, but I want mm-hmm. to get there as early as possible to avoid the traffic. Because, like you
right.
say, there are several thousand journalists all trying to arrive at the same time on Monday, Tuesday morning. So
right.
it's a fight every year.
Yeah, well, it is worth it. It's everybody's been saying it's a great show. What was the, cars aside, too, and we'll get to the cars. Honest, folks, we've got him for another 10 minutes, maybe. I really liked, and I didn't notice them so much last year, the so-called product specialists. These
okay.
are the actual models. It's a whole company that provides well-informed, attractive young people, men and women, to actually not just be on the turntables when like every hour or whatever talking about the car, but they actually go through the crowds and meet people and say, can I answer any questions? And it's not, these are not representatives from the manufacturers or local car dealers. These are actually they were everywhere. It was wonderful. I mean, first of all, you get your questions answered pretty authoritatively. I mean, apparently there's a supervisor for each car brand, a supervisor model, product specialist, and I was referred to them a couple times because my questions, being a car guy, were not in their training.
Complex.
Yeah, but still, it was wonderful because in the past they've just proliferated with all these computer terminals where you need a question, go there and go on the computer, and they still had those, of course. But it was great to be able to talk to these very nice people. I mean, they were not there because they were getting commissions or, you know, being paid to say these things. They did have the information, and they had their little phones that were taking down your name and email if needed for, you know, follow up. And so I really liked that. I thought that was the personal touch that had been missing previously.
Absolutely.
Do you remember that those kinds of people in numbers last year or the year before?
This year, I think it was definitely higher numbers. They've always been around for, like you say, that personal touch. But mm-hmm. I think some companies realized it was cheaper and easier for them to throw up the computer terminals where you tap the screen to learn about each car. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of people really appreciate talking and asking questions to someone.
I mean, if you do have a computer of your own, you can do that at home. You can
well,
tap
exactly.
the screen hours a day if you wanted to, you know.
The benefit is that a lot of people who go to the auto show might actually be interested in buying the car they're looking at. So they want mm-hmm. to ask a person questions about it or point to things on the car. Mm-hmm. So having a specialist there is really what you need to sort of help you understand, is this the car for me?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did think that was a nice touch. It was consistent throughout the area. Okay. I've got a number of categories that I had, and there's a lot, but I'm not going to keep you longer than another 6 or 7 minutes, Jake. So okay. we're talking to Jake Holmes, who's the associate web editor of Automobile Magazine, and he's a big car aficionado like I am, as well as somebody that gets professionally involved, too. Of all the electric-powered-only cars, what were you most impressed by? We're talking about under $50,000 here, I guess. So we got to leave out the Tesla, I guess.
Well, the Tesla obviously is impressive. We named it our automobile of the year this year. And another one that impressed me was the Cadillac ELR. Mm-hmm. Now, it probably won't fit under your $50,000 margin, but I'll mention it just because it's a Cadillac version of the Chevrolet Volt. And it's a two-door, a little bit more exciting styling than the Chevrolet Volt. So aiming for customers who want that electric experience but maybe want something a little bit more luxurious.
From what I've heard, though, the running gear, the engine, the battery, it's all going to be exactly the same as what's in the Volt.
It is. You might get slightly better acceleration. They might be able to tweak some parts of the motor, but it's for people who really want the style and the image of owning a Cadillac but still want to have a Chevrolet Volt.
I have not been able to see or find a Ford Focus electric, but the Nissan Leaf electric that was down there really did impress me. They've put a little extra, they've got a leather trim package now, and supposedly they got better batteries, and they're going to start making them in Tennessee in the U.S. This summer. So I actually was one of those crazy people who put a deposit on a Leaf 3 years ago, but they don't start introducing these things in Michigan because in the winter the batteries die quick, and I guess it's just not
exactly.
They had their rollout California, New York, whatever, so I don't know about that. Obviously, I love the look of the BMW i3, but I bet that's going to be pricey too. It's a little small.
Yeah, probably.
One, so.
And that's still a little ways out, probably. We probably won't see that on the roads for another year or two. But that's a very, very interesting car for them because it's built from carbon fiber, so the same material used for race cars or some of the newer giant airliners like the 787 Dreamliner.
And I just found out yesterday, I hope this is not a scoop for you, but I read green car reports on the Internet, and they said that BMW just introduced stated definitively that when the i3 is available, it's going to be a range-extended model at the same time available that has their two-cylinder motorcycle engine in there. And that won't be powering the wheels. It's just going to be like generating electricity through a generator to keep the battery going up to 250 miles. So that'll
absolutely
be interesting.
That's a huge boost for people because a lot of people are really nervous about driving an electric car like the Nissan Leaf because they worry that they can only drive 70 to 100 miles before the battery dies. So having that range extender on will make people so much more confident in that car.
In terms of plug-in hybrids, which I think are a great option, but they're still pricey, the Ford Fusion Energy, you have to talk about a Ford car here. We're in Dearborn, the station is. But the Energy, spelled with an I at the end, 21 miles on electric before you need to get the gas engine going. And so an estimated multi-situation mileage is over 100 miles to a gallon. But if you only go like 21 miles a day, you won't be using hardly any gas. That's pretty impressive. And that's only $4,000 or $5,000 more than the Leaf, apparently. So
that's going to be a great option as plug-in hybrids. So you can charge it up at home. And if you just drive around town all day, if you drive 21 miles, for instance, you won't use any gasoline at all. But then if you need to drive a long distance, go on a road trip to visit grandma, you have the backup of it still having the gasoline engine, the hybrid powertrain.
Right. Ford was saying that after the batteries go out, if you had a full tank of gas in that, you'd still go over 620 miles. But that's the range of that car before it needed more gas. I mean, you wouldn't need to charge it up for a while necessarily. But I think
they have another version as well with the same system in the C-Max Energy. So that's a small hatchback, sort of like a small minivan.
Yeah, I think that's impressive. I mean, they haven't gotten the word out much about that to the general public, but I would think a lot of people would like that. And it seems to me about the same, well, it's the same concept anyway with the plug-in hybrid, and it's It's less money than the Ford Fusion Energy, maybe $4,000 or $5,000. So, well, I guess we have to jump into the big question. What about that 2014 Corvette Stingray? Everybody, at least at Automobile and elsewhere, and you've got the Corvette, of course, on the cover of this month's Automobile magazine. What's your take on it?
I think it's great. As I'm sure you saw, the Corvette stand is totally mobbed at the auto show. Everybody wants to see this car. This is only the seventh all-new Corvette we've had in 60 years. It's the seventh generation. And the Corvette has always sort of been this icon as an American sports car. The new one looks great. It's going to perform even better than ever before. And, you know, we're all really excited to drive it. We like Corvettes before. But it seems like this one's going to fix some of the things that we've complained about in the past.
I had, in the olden days, and this shows my age, I had a 1973 Corvette, and it was beautiful to look at. It was all sort of gold, pink color, and but I had to get rid of it 6 months later. It was made so poorly, it was starting to fall apart. I mean, really, it was just a pile of junk, even though when it was together it was nice, and oh boy, the looks you get. So I guess I've been kind of against the sort of flash angle, but I know the Corvette has improved tremendously, but the interiors and the comfort of the seats, or at least the seats that came standard, were always a terrible problem for a car that costs around $50,000 or up, and that's another issue, I think. The last price I've seen, and they haven't announced real prices, is that the coupe will start at $59,000. Although I've seen people saying, well, $55,000 maybe, but and I found somewhere else the question of, will this really attract the young people to it, or the young people that have that much money? They said the average age of people that buy the Corvettes now is 59.
That is a problem, because car companies obviously want young people to buy a Corvette and then keep buying more Corvettes over their lifetime. And as you say, a $55,000-$60,000 sports car isn't always that affordable. But having the Corvette kind of has a halo effect on other cars. So maybe someone will say, well, I'd really like a Corvette, but for now I can only afford a Camaro for $30,000.
Or a Sonic or something. yeah, exactly. Well, the Camaros, I mean, they have their top of the line. Is it a ZL1? $55,000 for the one I saw at the auto show. So they're almost
the price of a Corvette.
Yeah, almost the price of a Corvette. But I'd have to say, though, personally, and I know my listeners really care, that the new Corvette Stingray design was just a little bit too flashy for me. You know, a little like those slanted Camaro-like taillights.
I've heard that from a couple of people who think that maybe the design went too far. Maybe they should have tamed down certain aspects of it. And it's true that there are more creases and lines and interesting shapes than the car had before. So,
I mean, if I could afford it, I'm sort of that Porsche Cayman 911 kind of guy, you know, smooth, rounded, And actually, if I wanted a flash car and I had the money, I thought, and it's the first time I've seen it in person, the SRT Viper, formerly known as the Dodge Viper, that is just lovely. I mean, that's certainly flashy, but it seems like it's a little more somehow constrained to me than the Stingray. But I'm, to admit it, I'm 67, so that's an opinion of a very old person, but you know, if you can afford these things, great. And I think, of course, if it handles better, performs better, better economy, more fun, then it's worth it. And sort
Absolutely.
Of say, who cares what it looks like? But
the new Viper is kind of, the styling went back a little bit more to the original Viper from the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Last generation Viper had perhaps a little more tame styling in some ways. It looked a little bit more like a Corvette. And so this one, going back to that bubble roof and having big scoops in the hood for the V10 engine to suck and all that air, that's kind of going back to traditional Viper styling. But it's not for everybody. It's kind of it is a very in-your-face car, that's for sure.
A little bit easier to drive, apparently. Not quite so brutal as the previous Viper, I understand.
That was the problem with the old Vipers, is that they were so powerful but very, very dangerous and tricky to drive quickly. One of the things that this new Viper has is electronic stability control, which is now mandated by law in every new car. So that will help drivers manage having all that horsepower a little bit easier.
I'll do three quickies here and let you go.
Okay.
best diesels. Now, I own a diesel. I've got an X5 BMW diesel, and it's, you know, it's wonderful, of course. And who would suspect that a car as big as an X5 SUV could get 34 miles to a gallon on the highway? I mean, okay, around the city, it's not quite as good, about 20, but, you know,
That's great on the highway for a big SUV.
Right. It's really unbelievable. And of course, there's some nice small diesels, VW and maybe Mazda in the future will be introducing some. Do you think that's a good way for people to go? Especially if they can, in fact, I even think I saw that maybe, if we're very lucky, the Volkswagen GTI might have a diesel option next year.
Yeah. Diesels are a great option for a lot of people because especially on the highway you can get incredible mileage. We have a Volkswagen Passat diesel and we regularly get more than 40 miles per gallon on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be more and more diesels on sale in the U.S. As you say, Mazda is launching diesels here for the Mazda 6 and mm-hmm. the CX-5 crossover. Jeep just added a diesel version of the Grand Cherokee SUV.
Right.
And there are probably going to be more Volkswagen diesels. Volkswagen already sells a large number of diesel cars here because they were one of the earlier companies to really adopt that. And there's a possibility we'll have a diesel version of the GTI. It's in Europe already. It's called mm-hmm. the GTD. Mm-hmm. So you get the fun of a sporty GTI, but you could maybe get 30, 40 miles per gallon at the same time.
And the torque of a diesel is really impressive around town. Even if the horsepower rating doesn't look that big, it really gets off the line quick. It really is kind of fun to drive even a small diesel just because of that initial rush sort of torque. So
absolutely. That's what everyone appreciates, is that when you pull away or when you go to merge onto the highway, you just have that surge of power as soon as the diesel engine is ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for those people that want affordable cars, what do you think might be the best affordable and still good performing car? Let's talk around $20,000. What would you apparently in your bio, just like myself, people are always asking, what do you recommend? So let's get economical here.
In that price range, two favorites for most of us on staff are the Ford Focus and the Mazda 3. You mm-hmm. can get sedans or hatchbacks, but they're fuel efficient. We think they're good to drive. They're sort of fun to drive. But not too sporty that they're uncomfortable. And those are things that we always recommend for around that price range.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for mentioning a Ford car again.
Of course.
let's see. So many other bests here. Well, in terms of concept cars, let's just end on a completely outrageous note, and maybe they won't be coming in the future. I thought Honda or Acura brand, they had the sports car, two-seat car called NSX years ago, and then they dropped that out of production. The new concept, I thought, was just gorgeous.
Absolutely. I love it a lot, too. I'm very excited to see that car when it actually hits the road, probably in about 2 years' time.
Although that BMW i8, which is just, it's sort of like the i3. It's a completely, like they have like tinted plexiglass. It comes down further on the car. It's just, now that's a two-seat sports car. The i3 was a little smaller electric sort of sedan, but the i8 is a big sports car. But
it is a very gorgeous looking car.
If you had the money, and you had to be sensible, of course, as a writer in Ann Arbor, but what do you think you would try to stretch to buy these days? Living in Michigan, you know,
well,
snow.
Living in Michigan means we have to be a little bit sensible, and we mm-hmm. can't always drive sports cars all year round. Yeah. You know, I love the Porsche Boxster. It was redesigned recently. Yeah. That's a great two-seat convertible. It's a blast to drive, and everyone loves the way it looks. But one thing that we saw at the Detroit show was the Audi RS7. Now, this is a high-performance version of that mm. Audi A7 that mm-hmm. we had stolen. And that really catches my eye. It's a ridiculous car that probably nobody needs. It does 190 miles an hour, but I just think that it looks fantastic. It has cooler wheels and little spoilers everywhere, and that's definitely a car I would love to have in my garage.
There's certainly so many choices. That's a great thing. If you're into individuality, automobile choice is just almost unlimited. There's so many choices out there today and so much competition, but I'd highly recommend people do read Automobile, and and the other great automobile magazines on a regular basis before they buy a car, even if they just think they just need a van for the family. There are better performing cars. We're not just talking acceleration. We're talking braking. We're talking handling around corners. And
that's absolutely true for every class of car. People may think that all minivans are the same, for instance, but some are more comfortable than others. Some are easier to maneuver in tight parking spots than others. So we try and give people an idea of what each one is like to drive.
I think they should go beyond reading Consumer Reports. I've never liked Consumer Reports. I mean, the basics are there. They've got the facts, but they don't enter into the big picture or the bigger picture, which is performance, handling, and, as you said, comfort, even excitement, if you will, which I think is important. Well, finally, just tell us about the website for Automobile Magazine, which you're a part of.
Yes, the website, which is automobilemag.com. We publish stories there every single day. There's news stories about what's going on in the industry, both in Detroit, other parts of the country, and Europe, Japan, wherever there is car news. When there are big auto shows, for instance, Detroit, we have a whole crew of us on the ground taking photos, interviewing people. So that's really the best place, we think, for people to get up-to-date car information. For instance, today we just have a new drive review of the new Subaru Forester that one one of our staffers wrote. So we have drive stories, feature stories, and also updates on the cars that we keep for a year at a time, our Four Seasons cars. So it's we think it's a good one-stop shop for everyone who wants to come and learn a little bit about cars.
Yeah, and of course you do have the magazine, and that's also available in iPad versions and so on, and everything is getting digital, isn't it?
It is. We love having the iPad issue. It lets us do some different things. Sometimes we can integrate videos into stories, so you read a story that was in the magazine, but now we have a video or an animation integrated into it. But obviously we're still in print form as well. Pretty much every outlet or at the airport, you'll see us there alongside the other car magazines.
You know, there are a few crazies like myself that spend $120 a year for a car magazine subscription, and it's not just on the postage. You know, it's one of the most beautiful. I think it's larger than 8.5 by 10. It's 8.5 by 12 or something, and it's just got the highest quality paper. I mean, it's just so beautiful to look at the photographs in this. One of your automotive competition magazines, they've gone recently to very cheap paper. I mean, and so I'm dropping my subscription to them. I mean, it just looks like, well, it's just very cheap. You can practically see through the pages. It's no fun to look at a beautiful automotive photography on paper that cheap. So I think that might be another way to go in the future, that all of your print versions for all of your magazines may actually go up in quality, you know, for the people that are willing to afford it that way. I couldn't afford the print copy of Top Gear. I'm getting that digitally, but I only have a small electronic tablet, so it's not as much fun as the larger glossy piece of paper. But keep up the good work out there. And
thank you very much.
You know, I do think it is the best automotive writing. That's my personal plug in print and maybe on the website, too, for automotive journalism here in the U.S. So keep up the
thank you very much.
Job. I'm glad you're in a career that you enjoy.
Thank you. So am I. I hope we don't disappoint you and that we keep doing well for you.
I'm sure you will. So just careful you're driving today. It's really slippery out there.
It is a mess outside. I'll go slowly on the way home.
Jake Holmes, thanks for your time so much. And now we're going to feature the other Jake Holmes as we conclude the segment of the new WHFR Journal. So thanks very much, Jake. Bye-bye.
Being choosed, well, I'd just like to know Give me a clue as to where I am at. Feel like a mouse and you act like a cat. I'm dazed and confused, hanging on by a thread. I'm being abused, I'd be better off dead. I can't stand this tease and I'm starting to crack. You're out to get me, you're on the right track.
His own cool reserve and his first-term penchant for pursuing a tepid middle-right governing agenda, I didn't expect to get much warmth from Barack Obama's inaugural address. I was surprised. In his speech, the re-elected president actually showed some FDR jut-jawed presidential flair. Rooting his address in America's solid progressive values, he issued a call for the great majority of our people, the middle class and the poor, to join him in a nationwide campaign to rebuild our country's infrastructure, our ladder of upward mobility, and, most importantly, our sense of shared purpose. Predictably, right-wing pundits and defenders of the corporate order decried his speech as partisan and socialist. But in fact, the best word to characterize the speech is simply American. It was a straightforward restatement of the grassroots principles that the founders first articulated. It's no accident that his most used phrase five times was, "We the People," the opening words of the remarkably progressive preamble to our nation's founding document. We the people still believe that every citizen deserves a basic measure of security and dignity, Obama reminded us. We do not believe that in this country, freedom is reserved for the lucky or happiness for the few. The commitments we make to each other through Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, these things do not sap our initiative. They strengthen us. They do not make us a nation of takers. They free us to take the risks that make this country great. This is Jim Hightower saying, at this difficult juncture in America's long and uncertain journey toward egalitarianism, when powerful forces of elitism are trying to push our society down the dark alley of plutocracy, this was the speech we needed. Read it for yourself at www.whitehouse.gov/blog/inaugural address. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for January the 25th, 2013. My name is Jay Koronek, and I'm happy to be with you today. I'm glad you're out there, too. Hopefully you're not driving your car too crazily right now. We just had a nice interview with Jake Holmes from Automobile Magazine about the auto show. And just as a follow-up to that, I want to mention that there are senior discounts. Tickets cost $12 for adults. This is the last weekend. On Sunday, there's no admittance, by the way, after 6 p.m., just so you know. It is open from 9 in the morning till 10 Saturday, no admittance after 9, and 9 a.m. until 7 on Sunday, no admittance after 6 p.m. So $12 for adults. Now, seniors, $6, and children's ages 7 to 12, and kids 6 and younger get in free when accompanied by a parent or guardian, by the way. And they didn't even ask me to show my ID to qualify as a senior. I was very upset over that. I think I look less than 65, but oh well. Parking is an issue. Dress up warm in case you have to park somewhere not too close. There's the Cobo Roof Deck, which I couldn't, was closed off. I couldn't get to. There's Joe Louis Arena, which is a very cold, shivery 10-minute walk. Only for people who are in good physical shape, I'd say. Millennium Garage, that's down Jefferson, I believe, and that's a good walk, too, to get there. So maybe you can park somewhere near the People Mover and ride the People Mover over, because there is a an indoor station right at the Cobo Arena for the People Mover. However, it is one of those Detroit once a year sort of rituals to attend the auto show. It is, of course, does represent, at least with the U.S. manufacturers, it represents still an awful lot of jobs in Michigan. I think a fourth to a third of all the jobs in Michigan are related to auto sales. So we need to keep the excitement going among ourselves, too. The second most expensive thing you'll ever purchase after a house, although that's a car, these days in some locations, in some neighborhoods in the Detroit metro area, you can buy a house cheaper than an average car. That's average new car. That's sad, isn't it? Okay, that's the auto show. Have fun if you haven't been down there. Be careful getting there. Be careful driving today. In the local papers here, Dearborn News and Alternative Views, Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday had a very good editorial opinion from Tom Watkins. He seems to be their default editorialist these days since they don't have an editor. That's right. They got a regional editor. I'm just wondering, who's making the decisions about what gets printed? You know, that's what an editor had to do. I said the same things about how crazy it was when they actually fired Gary Warrenchuk. That's right. I'm that old to remember, at the Press and Guide. He was a great editor. But they thought, well, maybe we can get along without an editor. What the heck? We'll just sort of throw the stories up in the air and see which one falls closest, and we'll put that on the paper. Oh, my gosh. You know, or get the business manager to decide what stories will get us more advertising. I mean, oh, my goodness. And they finally went back to hiring an editor at the Dearborn Press and Guide. Of course, they've been bought and sold by three or four different companies since Warrenchuk. And, you know, you don't buy a business, well, usually not for its public service value to the community, unfortunately. You buy it so you're going to make profit. You have to make a profit or you can't stay in business. But, excuse me, I think good community service can make a profit. Can definitely make a profit for you, but you have to have good writers, and you have to be able to attract them, and now they're down to like one full-time writer, and the others are just part-timers. What kind of writing and writing quality and story depth can you get out of that? Half of the stories I read in the Press and Guide now, and Times Herald to a certain extent, not half, they come right out of the police blotter. I mean, just copy it out of who got arrested and what the minor crimes are. Sometimes you can make a big deal about it, make it a headline story. In fact, you had to do no original writing at all. You just copy it. Just copy it, you know? And that's not good local journalism. That's, but they're holding their own and choosing Tom Watkins, as they had Tom Watkins. They were carrying Watkins' editorials before they lost Tim Powers. But anyway, Tom Watkins talks this week about education paving the way to a better future. The necessity for, of course, investing in our schools. The buildings are crumbling, the heating, the cooling. There's a story here that I got from Patch.com. And is it really relevant to have it in the papers a week later? But this last Tuesday morning, busing issues leave Dearborn students in the cold, parents in the dark. A combination of frigid temperatures and inadequate staffing led to some Dearborn students waiting for the bus, quote unquote, longer than they should have been, the district confirmed Tuesday. And of course, those were near zero temperatures and a terrible situation. Obviously, some of the older model buses, which are the older model diesel engines, by the way, these are the dirty diesels, not the new diesels that Jake Holmes and I talked about, they're not good in cold weather. I said I've had a diesel for the last 3 years. No problem at all. You know, the new diesels don't have a problem starting in cold weather like the decades ago diesels did, and that's probably how old some of our buses are, that's why they got delayed. But the department is also short-staffed, and there were, quote-unquote, a high number of absences today. Okay, I have you ever heard of the word substitute? Are there substitute bus drivers? I mean, obviously in bad weather, all kinds of people can't get in, administrators, teachers, as well as students, of course, who especially if they depend on the bus. There's a question always in these sub-zero temperatures, should you cancel schools? Interestingly, the charter schools in Dearborn, the several charter schools were closed Tuesday due to sub-freezing temperatures. But no, I guess it's okay in Dearborn to let the kids walk in the sub-freezing weather. I know in my day, as they say, all people of my years always say this, we went no matter what the weather was like. I had to go 2 miles, and I usually in the winter tried to speed it up by riding my bicycle. That's right, ride my bicycle, my two-wheeled bicycle on ice and snow with my, you know, parka and my big gloves and scarf tied around me. And, to walk it took me like 45 minutes. So with the bike, even with the ice and snow, it was only about 20 minutes. So we did it all the time. We weren't bussed in. We weren't, it's just the way things used to be. Abraham Lincoln used to walk miles just to get a book and back. So are we getting too soft, folks? I think so. Nonetheless, that's where we are. My comment here is just like Tom Watkins. And I have to also tell you my story about my daughter, who's a school teacher in Southfield Public Schools. Oh, here it comes again. Kornick always talks about his daughter. Well, she's been doing that for 12 years, science teacher at a middle school in Southfield. Tuesday, they didn't have any heat, but they kept them in school. Okay. Apparently, they fixed the furnaces like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon after classes were done. They did give permission for teachers and students to wear their coats during the day. That's just another example. Old equipment, old facilities, not enough engineers, not enough bus drivers. You know, in my dream, the schools should be managed better than even people's homes. I mean, that the kids going to school know the school's going to be warm and comfortable and supporting the kind of ideal environment for learning. And when it gets very hot, it's going to be cooled appropriately. My daughter has no air conditioning in her middle school. 3 months a year, they have all the fans on, the windows open. She has to yell and scream over the three fans, and it's still, I kid you not, on her side of the building, 110 degrees in her classroom. That's when it's only like 95 outside. That's the school building she's in. And maybe some Dearborn schools have air conditioning. I don't know. But we need, yes, to renew that millage, folks. And maybe they'll even, in their wisdom, ask for an increase of support for the Dearborn schools this fall. This November, they're going to be asking for a millage renewal. Maybe, who knows, they'll ask for an increase. We need, as Dearborn taxpayers, those of us that have jobs anyway, we need to put our money in our schools. The state of Michigan's not going to do it. That's already been proven, right? They barely give us enough to keep the teachers we have. Although every year except this year, we've had to lay off teachers because the state support, that is our money from property taxes, going to the state, but not enough coming back for our own students. So we need to help that situation out however we can. I mean, this is a disaster. It is the first step to making people capable adults and good citizens. And we can't have them going to schools where they're freezing or freezing on their way to the school, where they have third-rate food for lunch, full of sugar and fat, and so on and so forth. I could go down my list, but that's the end of this story. We've got to move on. It's about 5 minutes to go before 2 o'clock, and Highway 61 with Joanne Kay, we hope. I bet she's going to take her time getting in today. It's very slippery out there, as I said. Looking at the Times Herald from this last Wednesday, January 22nd, they mention about a good story in their summary of Dearborn Heights mayors that Dennis and I talked about last week here on the show. Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director, who couldn't be in today due to a transportation problem. Sound familiar? Yeah. And he's definitely going to be here next week, though. I know that. Okay, Louise Adre is remembered. She did pass away. That's Mike Adre's wife. They ran Adre Appliance. And I do want to thank Louise for any part she had to play in the support that Adre Appliance gave to WHFR. They were one of our sponsors for many years, sponsoring the classical music overnight. And, of course, George Bednar, who was quoted a lot. He was their vice president and general manager of Adre Appliance for many, many decades. Certainly, Louise Adre will be missed, along with Mike, of course, and the scholarship fund here at Henry Ford Community College, raising money for students to come here is a wonderful thing that they set up, and it's named after them, and we hope it can continue. The editorial on the Dearborn Heights Times Herald is from the Port Huron Times Herald. They rarely write one themselves, but they get some pretty good ones. This one talks about Michigan High Court vacancy and opportunity to do things right for Governor Snyder. And maybe you've already heard his response to this. And by the way, that was Jack Lessenberry's editorial last week. Last chance for Snyder. State Supreme Court appointment will show the Gov's true colors. Michigan. Now, this is a Democratic-supported justice, Diane Hathaway. She's leaving Supreme Court. She has been, she deserves the famous presumption of innocence. But the Judicial Tenure Commission says that that she did wrong things in terms of selling houses and making profits she wasn't supposed to make. And again, imagine the Supreme Court justice being found guilty of this kind of corruption. But as he says, presumption of innocence, just the Judicial Tenure Commission said she did these things. So anyway, there's a vacancy, and that means the governor can appoint a new Supreme Court justice. Michigan has been known by various studies to be the most partisan of all the courts in all the states. In other words, it's the most easily swayed by political movements, less respected by judges all across the country. And the various committees have actually come up with an answer that is nonpartisan, really a nonpartisan way to appoint judges. And it could be done now. It could be done now. Except And this is my recollection from this last week. Governor Snyder has not made an appointment yet, but he said, well, I'm getting input from all kinds of people, like all my Republican friends. But he said, you know, that's a great idea to have that nonpartisan committee. That would really be a good idea. It's a really wonderful thing. I don't have time now. I just don't have time to do that. Excuse me? We don't have time to get an unbiased, nonpartisan, good justice of the Supreme Court? You know, I'm not asking here for a Democrat partisan. I'm not asking for Republican. I'm asking for somebody that knows the law, years of study, a scholar, okay, a fair-minded person. Isn't that the kind of judge we all want if we had to appear in front of them for some kind of wrongdoing? Of course. So good for the Times-Herald to publish that. But Governor Snyder, and Jack Lessenberry's opinion too, he's certainly not a Republican, but Lessenberry, you know, feels the same way, except Governor Snyder says, well, you know, yeah, that's the way to do it, yeah, but I don't have time. Well, there's no deadline, Governor Snyder, for this appointment. There's no deadline. You could do it whenever you wanted to. You could wait a little while and get it this commission going so that these people are appointed that way in the future. But nope. Okay, just a couple minutes to go, and we're going to cover here for Joanne Kurchinska's arrival for Highway 61 Blues. It is WHFR Dearborn. It's almost the top of the hour right now. Also, an editorial from in the Times-Herald from someone this last Wednesday, Michael D. Lefebvre from, yes, that conservative think tank who only thinks conservative. Kind of interesting, huh, here in Michigan. But I agree with him on this. Isn't it amazing? He talks about Wings World. All the money the legislature voted, I think it's $180 million or something in tax credits, for expanding the Red Wings facilities in Detroit. Now, you sports lovers, I know that's your first priority. You want more of that. But Michael D. Lefebvre, read this by all means in detail. He says it's crony capitalism at its worst. Of course, Michael D. Lefebvre is, and the Michigan Center for Public Policy has never been in favor of any government investment in any industry, not bailouts, not whatever. And many of us would not like to have seen a lot of companies like Wall Street bailed out the way they were and not held accountable for their crimes, as I see it, back in 2008. This giveaway to the Domino's pizza guy, it shouldn't have been done. Absolutely not. Tax dollars shouldn't have gone to that. It'll cause other new development and businesses around it. Maybe, but does it pay the taxpayers back for all the money we're actually giving here? Probably not. Moving to the Dearborn Press and Guide, and our podcast will cut off in about a minute if it hasn't already. So goodbye, folks, if you're listening. McDonald's and franchise owner ordered to pay $700,000. Because in Dearborn here, one of their McDonald's restaurants, owned by a particular franchise owner, were selling non-halal meat. And I think that's because they said it was halal meat. So imagine, though, that